Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewire.news podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that is enjoying watching Donald J. Trump implode. I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo. Rewire.news is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web. And the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
So Jess, I just started watching Pose, which is about Black trans culture in the 80s. It's an amazing show. I love it so much. And, you know, it got me thinking. LGBTQ people have suffered egregiously when it comes to equal rights in this country.
Yeah, that is totally true.
Which is why I'm so glad that it's 2019 and I can safely say that LGBTQ people have achieved full equality. We did it, everybody. We did it.
I'm sorry, what?
Well, you know, in Lawrence v. Texas, Anthony Kennedy said that gay people could have all the gay sex that they wanted, and that was pretty sweet.
Yeah, no.
And then in Obergefell v. Hodges, Kennedy said that gay people could marry each other, which was like, hooray, now queer people can get married and divorced just like the straights do.
Well, okay, and
so we did it, Jess, we did it. Sex and marriage, full equality.
Okay, Imani, I know I have a cold and all, but are you okay?
No, what's going on? I'm not okay. I am frustrated.
Because all of those things you just said about LGBTQ people finally achieving full equality aren't true. So is that why you're frustrated?
Yes, exactly that. You know, I feel like once again, you and I were yelling at the top of our lungs about how LGBTQ rights are not safe.
Yep.
Especially when it comes to white Christian evangelical efforts to wield the First Amendment and freedom of religion as a weapon against LGBTQ people. Like, for example, so that they can refuse to bake cakes for gay people or refuse to let trans people use the bathrooms that align with their gender identity. We were screaming about this shit for years, and I felt like people were not listening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I had a dollar for every time someone told me that gay rights are safe because, look, a lady can marry another lady now. Isn't it grand? I'm going to jump out a closed window.
No, please. Stay here. But I hear you. I do. Because a lot of people really did get complacent, and it did seem like the Obama administration was moving LGBTQ equality in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was the Dear Colleague letter that told schools that they had to let trans students use restroom and locker facilities that aligned with their gender identity if they wanted to keep their public funding. There was that.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was the EEOC rulings that employers who discriminate against gay and trans people, well, they're violating the Civil Rights Act. So mm-hmm. another good step. And even the notion that Christians could discriminate against LGBTQ people because their very existence is against their religious beliefs seemed at the time like this ridiculous prospect.
It did. And, you know, unfortunately, during the Obama administration, attempts to enact ENDA, which is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, those attempts stalled. And that's a real shame because LGBTQ people sure could use that sort of protection, especially during the age of Trump.
God, is this true? Especially also with Justice Kennedy off the bench.
Ugh, Tony, why? You broke my heart.
Seriously. And the first real week of the SCOTUS term, and there is a trio of cases on the deck that will determine whether or not an employer can fire you just because you're gay or trans. So those protections would have been really helpful.
Yep. And that's what we're going to talk about in this episode. On Tuesday, the court is going to hear oral arguments in three cases that could determine whether or not your boss can fire you simply because you are gay or trans. In these cases, the court will have to decide whether or not Title VII's prohibition on employment discrimination, quote, because of sex, includes sexual orientation and gender identity.
Okay, Imani, these cases are absolutely historic.
Indeed.
It's the first time the court is hearing a transgender rights case. It's also the first time the court will consider whether or not sexual orientation discrimination is a form of sex discrimination. And, I mean, let's be honest, basically Kennedy's entire gay rights legacy is on the line here. So what are the cases?
Yeah. So the cases are, there are three of them, as we've said. One is called Altitude Express versus Zarda. The second is called Bostock versus Clayton County, Georgia. And then the trans rights case is called Harris Funeral Homes versus EEOC. Now, together, these cases are going to ask whether or not Title VII's ban on discrimination, quote, because of sex, includes banning discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and or gender identity. So Altitude Express versus Zarda is the case out of New York and involves claims by a skydiving instructor, Donald Zarda, that he was fired because he was gay. And he claimed that that firing was a violation of Title VII. Now, a trial court initially threw out Zarda's Title VII claims on the grounds that the law does not protect against discrimination claims on the basis of sexual orientation. But the entire Second Circuit Court of Appeals disagreed and ruled that Title VII does apply to discrimination claims like Zarda's because discrimination based on sexual orientation is a, quote, subset of sex discrimination.
The court will hear that case at the same time it hears the Bostock case. And that case involves Gerald Bostock, a child welfare services coordinator in Clayton County, Georgia. Now, Bostock claims that after his employer found out he was gay, he was falsely accused of mismanaging public money and fired. Bostock claims that reason was pretext, the legal way of saying bullshit, and that really they wanted to fire him because he's gay. Bostock sued and lost both at the trial court and the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, who said that Title VII did not cover sexual orientation discrimination claims.
And that means we have one of my favorite things. I'm just going to just sit in this moment, just breathe in and out.
Hold it in.
Circuit split. We have a circuit split.
It brings out jazz hands, spirit fingers for the circuit split.
I do. They were just like inadvertent jazz hands. I didn't even know I was doing it till I looked down and you mentioned it. But we have a circuit split, and the Roberts Court is going to have to settle that split.
Yep. Then there is the Harris Funeral Homes case. Now, this case was filed by Thomas Rost, who owns a small funeral home in Michigan. He describes himself as a devout Christian and claims to run his business according to his religious beliefs. In 2007, Rost hired Amy Stevens, who at the time was living as a man. Stevens was, by all accounts, a great employee, and 6 years into her appointment, told Rost she was trans. Now, you can probably guess what happened next.
I'm going to say that this devout Christian was really super understanding and said, you know, Amy, I respect you and I respect your choices and I respect you as a transgender woman. And it is perfectly fine for you to present as a woman at work. We will make the accommodations. It's all wonderful. That's what happened, right?
This is since the beginning of this episode. You are just off the rails. No. Ross probably fired Stevens on the grounds that if she transitioned at work, she would be in violation of the funeral home's gender dress code policy because she was, quote unquote, biologically male.
Except who cares, right? Like the fact that she's biologically male has no bearing on anything because the fact of the matter is she is a woman and therefore wanted to wear the women's dress code. And this guy was like, no, you can't wear the women's dress code because you're biologically male. Like, And second, and also, I really need to mention, you know, we talk about the Price Waterhouse case a lot, Price Waterhouse versus Hopkins, about Ann Hopkins, who was fired, or not fired, but rather not given a promotion because she was, quote, too macho. And we talk about how the Supreme Court said that gender stereotyping is a type of Title VII violation. So what is sort of, quote unquote, refusing to abide by societal expectations of what men and women are supposed to be or supposed to look like or are supposed to dress like? What is that if not gender stereotyping?
Absolutely. And this case really gets to that nugget. Well, Rost also claims that he would be violating God's commandments by allowing Stevens to transition at work, Imani.
I don't recall. I mean, look, I am not a Bible expert. I am not a theologian of any sort, but I'm pretty sure that the Bible doesn't have anything to say about trans people, or especially doesn't have anything to say about whether or not trans people can transition at work. But that's just me. I don't know.
I guess we're going to find out.
Maybe some Bible scholar can like hit me up on Twitter and correct me. Find me chapter and verse where it says, thou shalt not transition at work.
Thou shalt not. Oh, man. So these are the cases. Now, the court consolidated the two sexual orientation cases, Zarda and Bostock, for oral arguments. That means that the court is going to hear those cases together. Those arguments will last an hour. Then there's going to be a separate argument for Harris, the transgender rights case, and that's also going to last an hour.
So what's something that's on your radar when it comes to these arguments, Jess?
Great question. You know, we've covered these cases and the law at issue a lot on the show and a lot over at Rewire.news. But one of the things that really stood out that I am going to be paying attention to very closely is just what exactly the Roberts Court is going to do about all of this misgendering of Amy Stevens. So Alliance Defending Freedom, the conservative litigation mill that is representing the folks pressing all of this and the Trump administration, frankly, they intentionally misgendered Stevens throughout their brief and throughout these entire proceedings. And that is really significant. And it's significant not just because they're being big jerks about it when they do that, right? So this is the first transgender rights case to come before the Supreme Court ever. How the court deals with the issue of misgendering plaintiffs in this context is going to send us a lot of signals about what the conservatives on the court in particular think about this area. I mean, we already have every reason to believe that they're going to be hostile to Stevens here, but also how do the liberals on the court deal with this, right? Like, this is absolutely going to tell us a lot, not just about this case, but future cases too. It's not just that it's rude. It's not just that it is impolite. It's that it sets a legal frame for the case too. And so what the court does with it and how they handle it, and in particular, I would love to hear a justice correct someone from ADF during oral arguments on that. That would really be send a strong signal. But that's something that is really front in my mind right now. What about you? What's something that you're thinking of?
I mean, honestly, that yeah. quite a bit, because I read one of the briefs filed by a group of, you know, Christian evangelical jerk faces, essentially, said, literally argued in their brief that it was judicial error. It was prejudicial error to use Amy Stevens's preferred pronouns and to refer to her as a woman. This is what the brief said. Like, I read this and my jaw just dropped to the floor. The brief said, judges are not free to choose to respond with tolerance and understanding, as if confused persons like Stevens are their patients on the proverbial psychiatric couch instead of plaintiffs in a legal dispute at the bar of justice.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine? It's not.
I'm sorry.
It's prejudicial error to use a person's like preferred pronouns, and judges are not free to respond with tolerance and understanding. What are you talking about?
Well, in prejudicial error, let's talk about that for a second, because what they're saying is it is an error of law,
right?
To do so, like, that is a huge claim to lob at the court, that you are making a fundamental legal error.
Yeah.
To identify someone correctly. Like, that's
wild.
Garbage.
And you know, another thing that really is going to be interesting to see as a result of this case is the framing of trans rights as special rights, as additional
Excellent.
Rights, you know, right?
Excellent
point. Like, big trans is out there trying to get rights that other people don't have, that cis people don't have. And that's just preposterous, because frankly, the right to go to work and not be discriminated against is not a special right. It's a right that almost everyone has. But after these cases hit the Supreme Court and after we get a decision, LGBTQ people may be the only category of people who can be fired from a job simply because of who they are. Like, it's like, it would be like going back and saying, you know what, Black people can't work. So if you're Black and you get fired, tough titties, because you know what? That's just the way the law is. It is.
Well, and I think your point about it, the framing of special rights, is really important in the way that the court is going to hear this case, is because Title VII's ban on sex discrimination covers sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination. Like, it just logically flows. We've talked about that a lot on this. And what we are hearing in the attacks from it is all sorts of like twists and turns and perversions of that. And it fits absolutely right into that special rights framing, right? The idea that this is outside the scope of the law, what the folks are asking for in these cases. So, yeah, that's a really excellent point. Another thing that I think is going to be really interesting to watch is the scene outside the court. Mm-hmm. It's going to be bonkers.
It's going to be mayhem.
And good. You know, I mean, good. Frankly, like this is democracy in action. These cases matter to people and they want the justices to know. So there are going to be protests, civil disobedience, people around the court. It's going to be loud. It's going to be rowdy. And I think it invites a conversation into, well, how fundamentally undemocratic the Supreme Court is, right? Yeah. Like we have these lifetime appointments and the public has barely the opportunity to have a say in it, let alone participate in these cases. I mean, you know, it raises questions like, why the hell isn't there at a minimum live streaming audio of these arguments, you know, let alone cameras in the court? So it's a moment for our democracy, too. And I think that there's going to be that's how the court and how the press responds. And all of that is just is something interesting, I think.
I'm depressed. I'm just worried. I'm very, very worried about these cases. And I am really kind of distraught that we let it get this far, that we didn't pass ENDA, that we haven't stood up more staunchly for the rights of LGBTQ people in areas outside of sex and marriage. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, those are two very important aspects to people's lives in many cases. But holding down a job and not being discriminated against is pretty critical. And we are on the precipice of saying that an entire category of people do not have that right, do not have the right to just go to work and earn a living and not be discriminated against. And I find that just profoundly depressing. And on that note, we're going to close the show. lovely note. If you want to talk to us about these Title VII shenanigans, you can find me on Twitter at Angry Black Lady. You can find Jess on Twitter at Hegemommy, Hegemommy. You can follow Rewire.news at Rewire_news. And you can and you should join our Facebook group. Answer the questions. Honestly, people, I don't know how many times I got to tell you. Please answer the questions. We want you in our group, but you got to answer the questions. Like Justice Kegstand, Brad McBeer, Chugs McCaverton, Rapey McDumbface. You know, they're all of these names that will, these are answers to one of the questions. Once you get to that point on Facebook, you'll understand.
There are a couple questions.
Yeah. Just they're easy peasy. And aside from that, we're going to see you on the tubes.
See you on the tubes, y'all. Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piclo and Imani Gandhi. This episode was produced by Mark Folletti, who is also our executive producer. And the Rewire.news editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.